Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges.
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando. I have two ladies guests today. One is Rachel Prestipino, who is the Vice President of Education for the University of Virginia Chapter of the International Justice Mission. And also with us today is Elizabeth Surratt, who is an active member of that chapter. First of all, Elizabeth, since I haven't spoken to you before, how are you?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me on the show.
My pleasure. And Surratt, you know, has quite a historical name. Are you connected in the historical line of Surratt name?
I actually am not. We have done a lot of research into that because she's such a high-profile character. We found out that we are in no way blood-related.
Well, we love you anyway. and very happy to have you on the show. So first of all, if we could, Rachel, let's begin explaining to people what is the International Justice Mission and what it is, what the chapter at the University of Virginia is trying to do in connection with it.
Sure. So International Justice Mission is a global nonprofit of which we are just a campus chapter, as you said. So SAM abroad, their mission is to protect impoverished people from violence. So that takes lots of forms. That can be things like human trafficking, forced labor, slavery, as well as sex trafficking. That can be things like police brutality, citizenship rights abuse. There are many sort of injustices that IJM works to protect people who are disadvantaged one way or the other, whether that's socially, economically, financially, whatever. Whatever their disadvantage might be, IJM works to protect them from violence around the world. And so IJM and UVA, we are a campus chapter that tries to support their global mission. And there are lots of campus chapters around the U.S. And so what we do, we are connected with the headquarters in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And our mission around campus is to make people aware of these issues through sort of educational events. We also do a lot of fundraising. We just had a 5K race a couple weekends ago. And all of our proceeds from that goes directly to IJM headquarters in D.C., and also we try to do some hands-on practical things in our community. You know, most people don't know, but sex trafficking and forced labor, slavery, these are real problems in the U.S. as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different sort of grassroots organizations around Charlottesville that we partner with. Actually, coming up, we have an event called Fear to Freedom, where we are going to be putting together aftercare kits for survivors of rape, which will be going to UVA Hospital. And the president of the university is actually going to be speaking at that event. So, yes, we do try to do as much in the Charlottesville community as we can as well.
Excellent. And that's President Teresa Sullivan, we know.
Yes,
that's
not Obama.
Speaking of presidents at every level, what is happening with the state government of the Commonwealth of Virginia? I mean, you talk about modern-day slavery, which is a pretty hot phrase to use, and I would guess you get either a reaction of, what are you talking about, we don't have that, or some kind of resentment to labeling America, any American city or county or state, with that probability. What sort of reaction are you getting first from the people on the street? You know, you mentioned your 5K, but also from people in the state government, like the Virginia General Assembly, for instance. But let's start with the people on the street first. Huh? The reaction to the 5K was great. How about overall and in general? You're pointing out this. I mean, I would guess after some recent events at University of Virginia, the university community should be quite receptive. Well, what's happening?
Well, modern day slavery, as you said, is sort of it can be a polarizing term. It's certainly a buzzword at times, and it brings back sort of this not such good memories within the American imaginary. But you know, the slave trade, even though it looks different than it did when it was Africans being brought to this nation back in the 1800s, even though it looks different, it's still a real thing. Modern day slavery, it takes many forms. It's much more sort of insidious and hidden. Mm-hmm. The United States, because obviously slavery is illegal here, so it has to take much more hidden forms. But it's not always a sort of public thing, but it's people being exploited, whether that's through sort of psychological coercion or actual physical bondage, to do things against their will, whether that's in the form of sexual acts or forced labor. Mm-hmm. It is a real thing, and sometimes people don't always react well because they don't want to face the brutal facts, honestly, that this could still be happening and be happening in a nation that we love. But it's true, it happens. And as you said, I think that the university community is more receptive to that term. And I think Charlottesville at large, you know, at times it can be a pretty progressive little town. And I think that people are sort of, coming around to recognizing that this is a problem and something that we can mobilize to end. And you mentioned the Virginia General Assembly. Actually, just recently, there was a bill put up to a House subcommittee that was trying to change the laws around sex trafficking.
Uh-huh.
And so that bill actually passed the House subcommittee, and it's now going to be moving on to be approved by another committee, and then it'll go out to the House floor. And actually, there was a bill that was shot down by the House last year, but this one's making some really good progress, and we're really excited about that. We had a couple chapter members, including our president, actually, he was in attendance for that House subcommittee, so we're very excited about that.
Excellent.
As well as nationally, there was recently a hearing with the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee, where Gary Haugen, who is the president of IJM globally, spoke on the issue of modern-day slavery. And it was a hearing to do, research and recognize as a nation that this is a global issue that we need to be engaging with and hoping to end. So I think the term is really, people are coming around to the idea that this is an issue that is prevalent and that we need to mobilize to end it.
Elizabeth, since you're with us there, you're an active member in this. What in the... IJM at the University of Virginia. I'm just wondering, what are your thoughts about some specific examples? I mean, it seems that human trafficking and modern-day slavery, we think of those, as Rachel has pointed out, that we think of those, or most people do, as things that happen somewhere else. But as Rachel has been pointing out, no, it's going on here. But can you give us some specifics so that we recognize it? I mean, for instance, would you call the treatment of Hannah Graham by her assailant, is that a sort of an extension of modern-day slavery? Can you give us some, in other words, I'd like the audience to know what it is when they see it. And as Rachel has pointed out, it's different than we see on television and in other countries. Give us a clue.
Point about Hannah Graham, I would just say that not necessarily an extension of modern day slavery as we see it, but maybe a part of the pathology behind it.
Yes.
That there's this idea of oppression and this idea of exploitation. When people see an opportunity arises where they are able to exploit someone who is in a weaker state, often they might take it. And so that, I think, was the case with Hannah Graham, and that is the case with modern-day slavery, that it's a crime of opportunity, and that people see that trafficking or exploitation is a really lucrative business to get into, and the sad part is that in a lot of countries, even in this one, there might not necessarily be a lot of recourse to their actions.
Uh-huh.
And in developing countries, the problem is the laws themselves, that there's not rule of law in many countries. Here, the case is not necessarily that we don't have strong rule of law, because we do.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that people don't necessarily know what to look for.
Yes, exactly.
Sorry, you know, is your, the question you're getting at. And there are a lot of warning signs, and there are ways to go about looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
But as Rachel said before, it is an incredibly hidden crime. One way in which it is made very, very visible is in large events that bring people, a lot of people, into one place. A great example being the Super Bowl. I know that gets a lot of national attention in the press about being a hotbed, so to speak, of sexual trafficking in particular, just because there are hundreds of thousands of people coming into one city at a time from all over.
Mm-hmm.
And there's sort of a scene of chaos, almost, of just all these people, and you don't know where they're coming from or why they're there. They could be there for the game. They could be there for, you know, any number of reasons. And every year, without fail, there is some sort of breaking news story about the Super Bowl as this source of trafficking, and there's always a lot of convictions. There's a lot of focus on this one event, and you can see it in other ones as well. I think it's good to draw national attention to this issue. The problem I see with that is often people will then just start associating trafficking and forced labor with these big events like the Super Bowl, and say that if we can just amp up security and amp up prosecution around these events in these cities while these events are taking place, that's good enough.
Hmm.
And that can often be a distractor from the fact that this happens every single day. And that is an issue that's a lot harder to solve. And there are great organizations that are tackling that on the ground. In Charlottesville itself, there is an organization called The Arbor, which is very newly opened, officially opened this month, or I'm sorry, January.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a steakhouse, so to speak, for women who have been victims of forced labor and trafficking that are found in Virginia.
Uh-huh.
And so they are doing amazing work, and they are doing a really great job of educating the community about signs of trafficking and forced labor, as well as just the prevalence of it and the fact that it does happen in our state. It happens in our city itself. And so I'm really looking forward to them growing this organization and having just a broader reach in our community. I think it'll be a great tool and a great resource for community members to educate themselves about how to look for signs of trafficking, how to look for signs of forced labor, and what they can do to help that.
So you, just to play devil's advocate for the audience a bit, I hear what you're saying, and I, like many people, I guess, hear this in somewhat of, what are you talking about? Are you saying that huge events with huge crowds, like the Super Bowl, but not exclusively to the Super Bowl, that people are kidnapped, or what, and then taken into modern day slavery, or that people are there right in front of us being treated this way and we need to recognize it? It's not that they're being stolen away, but that there's a lifestyle being imposed on them. Can you clear that up for me?
Yes, I'll try to do so. I think it would be more of the latter, in that there are, in this country and around the world, there exist just huge trafficking rings. These sort of gangs of organized crime that center around trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people who operate in these circles see the Super Bowl and large events as a great opportunity for them to, I guess, sell their product, which would be human beings. And so not necessarily that people attending the Super Bowl will get stolen up and forced to into forced labor or trafficking, but that people who run or are involved in these trafficking rings will come to the city in which these events are taking place, bringing the trafficked peoples, and use that as a jumping point to, I guess, spread their product or to sell their product to
I
the people
see.
Who are there for the event and to just the people who are who descended on this city.
I see. Wow. That's really that's an eye-opening and mind-changing statement. So it can happen right under our noses, and that's your point, I guess, you and Rachel, is that we need to be able to see it. I used to always say to students, you have to listen with more than your ears, and I guess this is an example of that. What's happening on the federal level, Rachel? What's the U.S. Senate or Congress? Are they aware? Are they needing education, or are they moving forward on this?
Well, as I said, there was a hearing with the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee, and I think that reflected that the Senate really does see this as priority, or at least it's a growing priority. For the U.S. federal government.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the U.S. kind of sees itself as it wants to become at least a global leader on
yes.
this issue. There are countries that are doing a lot better than us when it comes to this. Like Sweden in particular has
mm-hmm.
very harsh laws against human trafficking, which is great. And they what they do a lot of is they end up prosecuting the John, so the people who are purchasing sex in the commercial sex trade, and that has resulted in a lot of deterrence in that country. And the reason why I think that doesn't happen here as much is because, honestly, that's just the budget. I think that it's not that the U.S. doesn't understand that would be a good method of deterrence. Some people, I mean, there's definitely some controversy over that,
uh-huh.
Because prostitution, even though it definitely is a source for human trafficking. There are a lot of people involved in prostitution who are not there willingly, but I think that there's sort of a lot of misconceptions around that trade. But it's not that I don't think that the federal government understands that. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that prosecuting Johns is very expensive. And the Super Bowl was a good example of that, because there are actually all these, there's a big national sting that involved 17 different states, actually, from, I think, January 15th leading up to the day of the Super Bowl. This was ongoing. And they arrested approximately 570 people who were attempting to purchase sex through online ads, things like Backpages.com and Craigslist.
Goodness.
This resulted in the rescue of 68 victims of human trafficking, 14 of which were juveniles.
Oh my God.
I think that, you know, this is getting a lot of national attention right now. And awareness always needs to be increasing, but I don't think it's that the federal government is not aware of it. I think it's gaining consciousness, and people are realizing this is something that we need to prioritize. And I think that the hearing, the Foreign Relations Committee, is a sign of that.
I see. Earlier when you, I so appreciate your answer, Rachel. It's just, it's opening my eyes to, I'm like most people, I guess, and I appreciate the education, and I'm sure the audience does too. As unpleasant as it may be to hear, this is something we need to know. And earlier when you were talking about the subcommittee, I thought you were talking about the Virginia General Assembly. You were talking about the U.S. Senate at that time?
No, the first time I mentioned both. I mentioned the Virginia General Assembly, and that was the House Subcommittee.
Yes, okay.
They have a bill going through, and they passed that bill from the Subcommittee, and
yes.
it's moving on to other committees, and will eventually be heard by the House, and that's within the state of Virginia.
Yes.
But then nationally, this has just been a lot happening nationally. There was a hearing with the U.S. Foreign Relations Committee, and Gary Haugen, who is the president of IJM globally, he spoke at that, and that wasn't pass a bill or anything like that. That was just sort of research and raising awareness around the issue. That was just a hearing. So there's a lot happening on both the state and the federal level.
Well, that's a good thing to hear. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, ladies Elizabeth Surratt and Rachel Prestipino, I would like I'd like to see if you're willing to connect some dots to a few things that I will mention. Of course, things that have happened recently on grounds at the University of Virginia. We are talking to the Vice President of Education for the University of Virginia chapter of International Justice Mission and an active member, Elizabeth Surratt. But I want, and again, just to make some clarity, some visuals, something we can hook and know, okay, this is an example of this. I'd like to look at recent events in our area and other places and see what you think the connection is, if there is one, and how much aware and committed we as a society, as a community, as a county and city, state, municipality, all that, how much we have to be more aware. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, and this is a meaningful and important conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Young teens Ellis and Neckbone, experiencing the idle joys of summer, find a boat in a tree on a deserted Mississippi River island. Intending to make it their own, they realize there's someone living in it. Mud, a fugitive from the law, is holed up on the island waiting for his lover. Director and screenwriter Jeff Nichols takes this simple thread and gives us innocence lost through exploration of love in the eyes of the young. His mission brings along Matthew McConaughey and Reese Witherspoon for some understated masterclass acting, with a lot of help from a strong cast, and delivers Mud. Indeed, Mud thrives as a modern Southern classic. Simple and heartfelt, the story is full of feeling and passion, penetrating insights into the struggle of love and its effects on all those within range, and the struggle of the young to comprehend the world around them. Mud might have been just another coming-of-age story, but magic finds its way through the languid heat of a slow Arkansas summer. And then along comes a moment that is instantly classic. Without speaking a word, Matthew looks up at Reese from a barren land. Their eyes meet, and not a breath escapes. Love, hopelessness, and acceptance. Mud. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guests today are Rachel Prestipino, the Vice President of Education at the University of Virginia chapter of the International Justice Mission, and with her, an active member also with that organization, Elizabeth Surratt. And ladies, thank you for sticking with me on this. I suggested at the end of the last segment that we try to connect some dots to current events, to the local news. Although this, of course, is, as with any Blog Talk Radio, this is international, but everyone can be helped by any example we can give, and sadly, in some cases, University of Virginia has been in the news a great deal lately. I'd like to know, how do you feel, for instance, the sexual assault, alleged sexual assault of the person known as Jackie, and the reporting of that, and the Rolling Stone, and then the Rolling Stone article being discredited, and then how people are responding, the President Teresa Sullivan, to the fraternities, and then the national sororities and their response. How does that connect or tie in with the mission? Is there an intersection with the International Justice Mission in any of that?
Yes, I believe there is. This is Rachel speaking, uh-huh. By the way. I do think that there's a connection. Sexual assault is a problem of exploitation of someone who is in power over someone else, or exploiting someone who's in a more vulnerable position.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is a lot of what IJM focuses on, is protecting people who are vulnerable. And honestly, you know, I don't use the word vulnerable to be patronizing in any way, because I think that at times in our lives, every single one of us is vulnerable for one reason or the other.
Yes.
And it's not a word that we're comfortable identifying ourselves with, but the honest truth is that we all have these moments where we are vulnerable and where someone else is in, you know, a position of authority over us or power or whatever. And I think that what's happening with the sort of recent news, the Rolling Stone article, it has highlighted an issue that is prevalent on not just our campus, but campuses all over the nation, and that sexual assault is a problem on college campuses. And I think that it's unfortunate that some of the journalistic practices were not so great with the Rolling Stone article. But I won't speak to what Jackie has experienced, because I don't know her. I'm not her, so I can't say what did or didn't happen to her. But what I can say is that her story is one of many that is sad and very true. And sexual assault, like I said, it is a problem. And I see the connection, like I said, with the whole power vulnerability complex. But also, I think that sexual assault, in a lot of ways, the commercial sex industry is just kind of commodifying sexual assault. It's, you know, paying to have sex with someone who's unwillingly involved in prostitution. That's the same thing as paying to sexually assault someone.
Yes.
So I think if we foster a society that thinks sexual assault is okay and doesn't want to protect people against that, if we foster that sort of society, then it's the same sort of society that will allow sex trafficking to run rampant. And fortunately, I don't think that that is the type of society that we are trying to, or the type of community that we're trying to foster here at the University of Virginia. I think that there, since this has been brought, especially to the national spotlight, there's been a lot of activity around it. There's some really great sexual assault peer advocacy groups here on ground. One Less and One in Four are two of them. And they do really great work. I see IJM as having a connection to this, but they're the ones who are focusing specifically on the issue of sexual assault on college campuses. And they do really great advocacy and education work. And then also, there's the administration and their policies, and a lot of work is being done there. And I know that people can be dissatisfied at times, but I do see that there's been a lot of attention being turned towards that. I mentioned earlier that we have an event coming up called Fear to Freedom, in which we will be putting together aftercare kits for survivors of sexual assault for the University Hospital. And President Teresa Sullivan will be speaking at that, and that event is coming up. It's happening on February 17th. So by the time this airs, that event might have passed, but hopefully you'll be hearing about that. I think that just shows, my point in bringing this up is that it shows that Teresa Sullivan does have a commitment to sort of seeing that this problem is addressed at the university, as well as all the administration. And, I probably sound pretty optimistic about it, but I do think that there's a lot of people around grounds who do care about this issue and wish to see it eradicated.
Well, you know, I agree. I share your optimism, at least your hope. And I wonder, Elizabeth, as we talk about, as Rachel was saying, I feel that the danger, of course, was, and perhaps still is, that the Rolling Stone article discredited Jackie, and then by extension discredited the vulnerable who have been assaulted. And I think, however, we've reached a point. I'm optimistic that we've reached a point in this whole arc that people are now thinking, regardless of the article or how they feel about what Jackie said happened, that clearly there is a problem. And when you have people like President Teresa Sullivan saying that, and the Board of Visitors, et cetera, and the community. Chief Longo is very involved. It's been on the show. It's been very clear about what he will not tolerate, and that he investigates thoroughly, tirelessly. So I'm wondering if we are moving into some recognition, thanks to organizations like the International Justice Mission and its chapter at University of Virginia, because as Rachel has said, Elizabeth, this is you know, this is on college campuses everywhere. It's at the Super Bowl, for heaven's sake. It's in the military. So, but I'd like to throw out something to you, Elizabeth, and maybe a bit of a curveball, but you can handle it. What about migrant workers? I've done a couple of shows on the Immokalee workers and who traveled from Florida up to, I think, New Jersey, depending on the season, who pick our food that comes to us and are paid pennies on the pound for a basket or something like that. Is that, does that come under, or does that reach or intersect with modern-day slavery? I know they do get paid, but they get paid so little, and huge supermarket chains like Kroger in Charlottesville, like Publix in Florida, where I lived for many years. What do you think, Elizabeth? Is there, I'm looking for an umbrella, I guess, that includes as many of the vulnerable as possible, so that with that umbrella, everyone's vulnerability is being addressed. Is there a question in there for you, Elizabeth?
Yes, I think there's plenty to work with there. And I think the umbrella that you're asking for in one word would be exploitation. And that, while yes, in many cases, those migrant workers are being paid something, that is nowhere near what any sort of market value price would be. And so, in that sense, the owners of the farm are exploiting those workers, and they're exploiting the vulnerability that they have at that point of being migrants in this country, and that they might not speak the language as well as someone who's grown up here. They might not have access to the financial resources that people who have grown up here have. And so I think that it absolutely ties into our discussion of human trafficking and forced labor. And IJ, especially in IJM's mission to protect those who are being exploited. And a lot of the ways in which this exploitation takes place on these farms, there's rampant violence there.
Yes, oh yes.
And sexual. And there's a huge problem with in particular migrant women who work on these farms not being protected from sexual assault in the case when, say, they're the foreman or the person who runs the farm or who runs
yes.
the day-to-day operations. There's so many accounts of just the abusing of that power.
Yes.
And exploiting the vulnerability of these women who have no really other option.
Exactly.
What it comes down to is that when people migrate to this country looking for work, often because of language barriers or visa barriers or whatever it may be, that often this seasonal agricultural work is the only job they can find.
Yes.
Which is the only job that's open to them. And so people know this, and people will use that and exploit them by paying them almost nothing, but the workers have no choice, because if they didn't take that job, there wouldn't really be any other option.
Exactly.
So they're forced, they're economically forced into this position, and I absolutely think that is a form of modern-day slavery, because it is forced labor, because they have had their option taken away from them, and they, in a way, their freedom is constrained.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because, as I said, I've done a few interviews with people directly involved in that, especially in Florida, and I believe the documentary is The Food Chains, and I've interviewed that director, and I do believe, I mean, we know, as you said, it's documented, that there is certainly sexual assault, and that very thing of the overseer, if you will, assaulting and imposing and intimidating control over the workforce is really an example of slavery. And modern-day slavery, yes, but it's very little difference between it and what went on in our history with black slaves. And also the living conditions and the working conditions, you know. You get driven to work in an old broken-down school bus, and you sit until the dew is off the the property, and then you work all hours, and then you're crammed into a trailer at the end of the day, you know, that's not big enough for as many people as you put in it. So I did want to touch on that, and we have some time left. Let's talk, Rachel, about giving some specific dates and times of things that you have planned or that you've done even already to remind people of, and most of all, how we can get in touch with you and get involved, if not in International Justice Mission nationally, then at least with the University of Virginia chapter.
Sure. So a few events, a couple of recent past events. I mentioned that we had our 5K just run in January, and I think that was our first 5K we've ever put on, but we're hoping to make that, you know, an annual thing. So just letting the Charlottesville community and anyone listening that is a thing that we're trying to make happen every year. It was really successful this year. We're very happy with it, and we look forward to continuing that in the future. And then also the event Zero Freedom, as I mentioned a few times, in February. For sort of upcoming events in April, mm-hmm. every year we have a week that we call our Justice Week, and we usually have three different events. There's things like speaker panels, documentary screenings, and an event called Stand for Freedom, which is actually in conjunction with the national, all the campus chapters nationally.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an awareness raising campaign. It turns into a social media campaign. And so all that's coming up in April. So we have a Facebook page. If you just type in IJM at UVA Facebook, our page will come up. That's a really good place to keep up with what's going on at IJM. That's probably the best way for people to access us. And then there's also our email, which is IJM@UVA@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way for people to be able to contact us. That's what's going on with IJM at UVA. I hope that people listening will try to come out and get involved.
Mm-hmm. All of that sounds grand. Elizabeth, can you, if someone like me, if someone showed up at one of the events and simply said, okay, what can I do to help? Because I know the events and the Facebook page and the website and email, all of that serves to make the connection. But what sort of things can they do? What sort of can the general public do to help?
Yeah, that's a great question. So specifically with our events, we love having volunteers from the community. For our 5K, we got a couple people from the Covenant School who came out and helped us. They made signs. They helped mark the course. And that was a really great way to involve the community. And we would definitely be open to having more people at events like that. We know that for Stand for Freedom, we love having people come out to learn more. It's just on ground, it's totally open to the public. We try to make all our events that way. And one thing is that I really believe, and I know that I think everyone else at our organization would agree, that everyone has resources that can help in this fight.
Uh-huh.
And that whether that's with their job or whether that's just a specific skill they have or just a really great passion for this issue, I believe that everyone has a very specific role that they can play in this. And so we are so open to having conversations about how best people can use their resources, their talents, their abilities to serve this issue. And so joining up with places also in the city, like I've mentioned before, the Arbor,
yes,
is a really great organization that can use. They're totally new. They love having volunteers. They are really great at working with the community. They work with counselors. They work with people who are social workers. They use people who are in the job placement field. And so I think that the key is just starting a conversation with people who are established in this issue and who know sort of the ins and outs of it.
Mm-hmm.
That part is, it's kind of tedious. tedious, and it does take a while to get, but there are places and there are mechanisms that exist that people can use as a resource and say, hey, I am, let's say I'm a counselor.
Yes.
What can I do? And we would say the Arbor would love to work with counselors for the people, for the women in their program.
Of course.
And so it's just finding that match of your skills, your interests, to the place where it's needed.
Excellent. Excellent answer. Thank you. Rachel, why don't you take us out with anything you think that we have not covered that needs to be covered? For instance, have you ever brought this up at a city council meeting in Charlottesville or with the Board of Supervisors for Albemarle County or Board of Visitors, for that matter, with the university? You've been able to reach those kinds of panel discussions and publicize your mission?
Well, I have not personally been involved with anything with the local Charlottesville city council or anything like that. Although I see that as being a new step for IJM UVA, I think that IJM at UVA is relatively new. It just started year before I arrived at the university. I'm a third year now. So we're a new chapter, and we're, you know, really excited about some of the events that we've established on grounds and the presence that we're trying to create. But yeah, I see that as being a next step. A lot of our community partners, the Arbor, as you mentioned, as well as Charlottesville Justice Initiative, they're very involved with kind of local city governance and that sort of thing.
Yes.
And so that has been sort of our connection to the greater Charlottesville community, but I can definitely see that expanding as far as the university administration and that sort of thing. I'm not sure that that's particularly the best avenue for addressing these issues in our city and our nation. But I think that it is important for just the the UVA community to know that we exist. And
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Get the word out, and thank you. So I think that IJM at UVA has a lot of exciting things in its future. But mostly the takeaway that I want for this audience, especially the international audience, is just to think about the issues that we've put forward today, not so much about our organization and what we're doing. There are lots of organizations like us, but to focus really on the issue, the fact that modern-day slavery, that's forced labor slavery, sex trafficking, and any of these issues that that these are real and they're pressing, and they're disheartening at times, but that there are certainly things that we can do to be involved in these issues in our nation and around the world.
Fantastic. Well, with that call to action, we're going to bring our interview to a close. We have been talking with Rachel Prestipino, who is the Vice President of Education at the University of Virginia chapter, relatively new chapter of International Justice Mission that has already accomplished a great many things moving forward. And we've also been chatting with an active member of that chapter, Elizabeth Surratt. It has been an incredibly informative and, as I say, a call to action to all of us. As Rachel put it, this is real. And we need to respond to this reality with all our best efforts. One more time, that Facebook address, if you would, Rachel?
Sure. Just go on Facebook and type in IJM at UVA. We should come up. Also, we have weekly meetings I wanted to mention.
Yes.
For university students. So really, I mean, if anyone in the Charlottesville community wanted to come, we would be so happy to have them. And those weekly meetings are Thursdays. I'm at 6 p.m. in Dell 1101, which is a building on grounds. If you just Google that, it should be up on the University of Virginia map. So we should be pretty accessible. That's Thursdays at 6 p.m.
Thank you so very much for that. And the best to you, Rachel and Elizabeth, and all you're doing. Bye now.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. There was considerable controversy surrounding the release of Snowpiercer. Distributor Harvey Weinstein was accused of not backing the film in theatrical release. Legend has it that the director wouldn't agree to Harvey Scissorhands' requested edits. Thus, the film came and went without much notice. But a quality production, featuring John Hurt, Tilda Swinton, and Ed Harris, deserves an audience. So, seeking to resolve global warming, the big corporations suggested releasing chemicals into the atmosphere to bring the temperature down. With such a privatized solution, everyone can continue to profit. Kings will stay kings. But something went wrong. Temperatures dropped to a point where human life was finished. The only survivors were those lucky enough to get on board the Snowpiercer, a self-sustaining train which is endlessly circling the Earth. Life on the train is segregated into classes. The exploited are in the rear, while the 1% live it up in the front. Such disparity inevitably leads to revolution, and those in the rear have had enough. The horrific lives of the exploited are fascinatingly contrasted with the excesses of the privileged in this rich morality tale, featuring amazing action sequences and stunning detail. Snowpiercer is imagination fully realized, a worthy addition to the genre of films depicting a distinctly dystopian future. Snowpiercer, not in theaters, discovery through rental. Find us on the web at indiefilmminute.com.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Bullies and friends, red versus blue, bonuses for rich, water shutoffs for poor, retired senior and aspiring youth, for better or worse, inequitable pay for women, the raped and the entitled. It's all bullying, and we're past due for our preventive inoculation. No matter how deep the abyss or high mountains loom, knowledge and awareness are the solution. Ever since Cain and Abel, the inhumane habitually badgered and intimidated human beings they perceived different, weaker, or less worthy. At the workplace to control the workforce for the marketplace, in the military and on campuses filled with gender opposites attracting best and worst, defiling to maintain caveman rights to take the spoils, spoiling lives with alcoholic assault. However, even a world seemingly overcomplicated with ceaseless demands and impotent bureaucracy, infused by those who need both redirect and misdirect the masses to serve up to the higher-ups, implementing 24/7 dummied-down maze of media myopic drool that keeps our heads spinning with spin, it's just another infestation of bully manifestations. Nonetheless, even the 1% behind the 2014 Bilderberg curtain pulling the bullied strings can be deflated like a football by the golden rule. Neither GPA, free community college, or four-year student debt-weighted, black, white, red, yellow, or sky blue green, whether middle school bully or high school bullied, full stop occurs only when the bully's target is us enabled with the courage to turn, face the craven rat with a mirror reflecting his coward scowl, proclaiming, "This far you have come, but no further. I am not your doormat, for I distinguish between bullies and friends." In every era, bullies and friends are rooted in history's documentation at all social and economic levels and marital status. But it is the younger circle of friends most tragically impacted by the evolution of bullying into trolling social media likes for power-yielding information, connecting the dots between Auschwitz death camps and new millennium breathtaking, life-snatching bullyside. While neither bullies nor bullying is limited to schoolyards, classrooms, voter polling places, private prisons, military deployment, or police state city streets, our most intelligent response, realizing both bully and bullied are among our friends, be a reasonable voice. Nip it in the bud perhaps remains a nation's most reasonable call to action. Stand with school friends who don't feel safe, not hesitating to be device-connected as security assurance, even in a teen's bedroom. As we celebrate the courage of Nebraska landowners standing tall against Keystone corporate political bullies, and the Friendship Nine sit-in against racial bullies, the prevention of sexual bullying is not, in banning the potential female victim from fraternity house bully pit parties, nor turning a blind eye to an elevator NFL wife beater, or a deaf ear to increasing numbers of spouses bullied on Super Bowl Sunday. As long as bullying lives in the hearts and minds of those who can only justify themselves by imposing oppressive power over others, most rapists and other bullies will remain co-workers, bosses, dates, police, classmates, family, and friends. Our 21st century devices are at once both inroads for sexual predators and digital informational highways to education and human development connection. The most mature response? Immunize our children against all childhood diseases, including bullicide. For like date rape, bullying thrives on adult ignorance of a child's life, and cyberspace bullying comes from both bullies and friends with deadly potential. Perhaps three life lessons? Laugh as much as you can, especially at yourself. Never miss an opportunity to say I love you, and always, regardless of their age, always listen to the children. For the younger we start, the greater the save. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard around the world.